Welcome to the Joy of Retail podcast, episode one, brought to you by Cake Agency, the e-commerce agency founded by retailers for retailers. I'm your host, Chris Thomas, CEO and founder of Cake Agency. During our series, we're going to be talking to a number of people from the world of retail, talking to us about how they find their joy in retail and their stories that they've had along the way in that time. We thought today it might be good to start with my own story from the world of retail. So whilst I'll be the host moving forward, we're going to switch seats today and I'm going to let my agency director from Cake, Kirsty Smith, be the host and she's going to be interviewing me. So over to you, Kirsty.
Hi, everybody. So Chris would normally be introducing our guests, but I have the pleasure of introducing Chris on the podcast this week. So I'm going to take it away. I'm joined today on the Joy of Retail podcast by Chris Thomas. Chris is the five-time Draper's award-winning CEO and founder of Cake Agency, a holistic e-commerce agency that unleashes the potential of ambitious brands. Using his industry-leading retail background, decades of experience as an e-commerce consultant, and a desire to take the pain out of business growth for retailers, Chris founded Cake Agency back in 2016. Now, before his life at Cake, he was a successful online retailer in his own right with over 20 years experience. He'll come on to tell you the story of Clogs, the family business that he founded, directed and bought online back in 2002. Chris is a strategic retail consultant and also joined P&Co. He joined as executive chairman in P&Co back in 2019, which is a role he fully embraces alongside everything that he does for Cake Agency. In Chris's words, and in the words of P&Co, life should never be boring, and there's no danger of that with Chris. So we're going to start with the question that we're going to start every Joy of Retail podcast with, and that is, how do you find the joy in retail? So Chris, I'm going to pass over to you. How do you find that joy in retail?
Hi, Kirsty. Nice to join you. And what an introduction. No pressure there. Yeah. I've been in retail for, as you say, 20 years professionally, but I've been in retail my whole life in one way or another. It was in the family. My dad had a big store in Birmingham. Anyone who's lived in Birmingham for the last 40 years would probably have a story about the Oasis Fashion Store, which is a store that was set up and started by my dad back in the 70s. And I grew up in there, basically. So as a wee lad in 5, 6, 7 years old, I'd be taken to the store on a Saturday. And I was in the world of retail from a very early age because of that. And it was a very intoxicating place to be in a retail environment. Very busy, lots going on, no 2 days ever the same. And I was hooked on it and that sort of environment from that age, really. Of course, my dad wasted no time in getting me to work. So I was in the stock rooms as a gopher, as like one of my first ever Saturday jobs at the age of 10, running to and from the shop with whatever size had been shouted up to me. And I've loved the hustle and bustle of it ever since, really. I suppose the joy comes in the fact that it is just, as I said, no 2 days are ever the same. There's always something interesting going on with customers, with staff, with the stock itself. Always exciting to see the new lines that would be introduced from season to season. I remember the kind of a fresh delivery coming in the loading bay downstairs and everyone kind of jumping on it in order to kind of see what the latest range of Dr. Martens looked like and get them into the shop and get them on display. It is a tough business because you are customer facing and it can be quite an intense environment to be in. But when it's done right and when you are on top of your game, I don't think there's anything better to be in, really.
And how do you feel some of that joy translates to the online store experience? Very much then you talked about how you felt on a Saturday and being in front of customers. Does that joy still translate for you?
Yes, but it does in a very different way. I mean, I remember when we started our store online. So I should perhaps just explain the setting. So as I said, it was a family business, the Oasis, and it was a 15,000 square foot department store in Birmingham city centre. My dad was effectively a landlord of that store. Five floors, bit of a rabbit warren, very close environment. Every kind of square foot was packed with retailers of all different shapes and sizes. But as well as being a landlord, my dad had a few stores that he retailed from as well. He had a footwear store, a jeans store, men's fashion, women's fashion. So I got a bit of a taste of all of them. But the footwear store was called Clogs, and that sold Dr. Martens, Kickers, Caterpillar boots, Bluntstone, things like that that were big in the 80s. And it was that store that we started to take online, 2001, 2002. And we'd be doing it at the back of the shop. So we'd be running a physical store as well as having this online store that we had no expectations for, really. But we just thought, for a bit of a laugh, let's see if we can sell a pair of shoes online. And if you can kind of remember an old rudimentary setup of a laptop with a massive screen and a huge tower computer, we had this kind of setup and terrible old speakers wired in. And we had it programmed that an order would come in through Microsoft Outlook, and when we got a new email, a little ching would go off. And within about 15 minutes, we'd taken our first order. And this little ching had gone off, and it was a busy day in the store, but we all heard this little ching go off. I go, what's that? It can't be an order. And we kind of rushed over and huddled over the computer, and sure enough, it was an order. And I remember it now, it was a pair of black smooth Dr. Martens, which was the staple order that we would sell for the next 20 years, by the way. And it was to, I think it was to someone in America, that just... Within a few minutes, this whole concept of going online had proved itself, and like we connecting with customers we would never have done anyway. The ka-ching I've always tried to keep with an online business, because it's intangible. It's not something you can touch and feel like you can a store, move your shoes around, move your stock around, interact with the customers in the same way. But the thrill of the kill of making a sale is still there, and it's refreshing a screen and seeing orders come in, it's still a high five moment for anyone, I think.
How did that customer find you? Tell me about that journey between marketing of your website. Was the website listed on Google?
Well, yeah. I mean, so clogs.co.uk was put online by my dad very soon after like the internet started to become a thing. So I think the domain was registered in like 1997 or something. So it had had some presence online, and I guess for that reason, yes, it was being indexed. Probably wouldn't have been Google at the time. It would have been something like Yahoo or Alta Vista or Web Spider or something. There were lots of lots of forerunners of search engines before Google really got its hands on the market. But yeah, it would have been a search for Dr. Martens, and we would have been one of, I guess, a very small handful of stores that were either online and certainly with the checkout. It was a real kind of a seminal moment, I guess, in my whole career, because I had been training as an accountant up until that point. So I'd spent 18 months in London learning how to be an accountant and learning the finances and so on. And I was taking a career break to come back to Birmingham to help out with my dad and his store. He wasn't well at the time. And to pass the time, that's why we decided to put it online, to see whether it could be of interest. And the fact that we'd taken an order within 15 minutes of the store being live was like, okay, I'm dropping the whole of the career. this has obviously got some legs behind it, and let's try and work out what to do. But in answer to the question about marketing, we had no idea. The world of online marketing is still being understood now, 20 years later. And back then, in 2002, no one knew what SEO meant. No one knew what pay-per-click advertising was. Social media hadn't even been invented yet. Email marketing didn't exist. It was all kind of fresh, fertile territory for us to kind of learn and work out how we could do it better than anyone else who might come our way in the next however long. And myself and my brother at the time who were doing it, we weren't necessarily as fashion orientated as my dear dad was, who was a very trendy guy from the 60s and 70s. We were much more spreadsheets, numbers, finance. But the world of online, I think, suited that because it was much more data driven. We could understand how a Google algorithm worked, or at least as best we could, and then work out how to implement that on a website. So we really got our heads into the principles of SEO. And that is really where Clogs as a business took off in the noughties, because we staked our flag in the ground before a lot of other people. And that was one thing that really mattered when it came to SEO, was length of time and how long you've been around online and how long you've been doing it well. That all counts and snowballs as authority. Because we've been doing it from the early noughties, you know, by the time 2010 came around, we were one of the leading lights online in terms of being found for products online. So we really went after keyword research. To go back to that first customer, what did they type in order to try and connect with us? And, you know, it would have been Dr. Martin's home delivery something. And the search engines would be looking for the most appropriate result to show. And that's what we really tried to do, and understand that at a very granular level. So we used to say something like, there was 100,000 landing pages into our site. Yeah, there were 100,000 different types of user journey that might find us. And we wanted to be the best for each one. So we were constantly making product pages, constantly making category pages, to really get to understand what SEO meant, and still learning.
We'll come back to a bit more about digital marketing, and we'll for sure definitely talk more about your journey with Clogs. But do you want to give us a brief overview of what happened after Clogs? What's been your journey since then?
We sold the business to JD Sports in 2013. And I stayed on as MD of Clogs for the next 4 years. We made that transition because we really wanted to be part of a bigger trade organization and shore up our kind of position in the market with a business that could offer the support with brands, because Clogs was a branded business. It sold a branded product, and JD Sports was a very well positioned branded retailer on the high street. So it was a very nice partner to be involved with. But the transition from being an independent owner-managed business to being part of a PLC was an interesting journey. Lots of very good moments. But one thing that I did really miss was the independence of having my own business and being able to act very quickly when I want to do something, being very entrepreneurial, as I'd become accustomed to in my previous business. And that just became a harder and harder thing to do in that organization for the right reasons. I began to get those frustrations after 3 or 4 years and wanted to get back into owner management. So I left in 2016, and I'd actually just had our second child. So Abigail came along in the autumn of 2016, and it was just actually a nice career break more than anything, to just spend a bit of time at home. And very organically, a bit by accident, I started helping out other friends in the industry with their online businesses. So they were approaching me for help trying to understand their digital marketing, how their website was performing. And very quickly, actually, it became an engaged position. I became contracted to those businesses, and I found it really interesting. I loved it. It was great to be involved in, you know, a handful of other businesses, having been in one business for 16, 17 years at that point. And I thought, I quite like this. This is a really interesting take on what I've been doing in the past, but I can do it for multiple businesses. And from that became the agency that is Cake. So it was founded by myself, a retailer, for the purpose of supporting retailers. Having been on that journey for 15, 16 years, I wanted to help other retailers understand my journey, help them, you know, miss a few potholes that they might be going for, and then understand what the real levers are to growth, and how we can help them scale their businesses, really. So from the start of 2017, we've been really kind of pushing at that door. And what was great to see, actually, was that, you know, the e-commerce industry was, as I say, still just getting going, really. Yeah, having been involved in it since the early noughties, I kind of felt like, well, everyone must know how to do e-commerce and what digital marketing is. But the realization was, as soon as I got out of that bubble and I was actually talking to, like, new business owners and startups again, that there was still a lot of education required out there. And, you know, I could share a lot of that experience that I'd been through and helping other brands in the same way.
So of all that experience, what would you say are the secret ingredients to retail that you've learned over the years?
I don't think there is necessarily one magic bullet that I can say this is the ingredient that's just going to make it all work. There's lots of plates you've got to keep spinning. But there are some that are more important than others. If we were having the conversation about retail on the high street, you know, it is the art of detail. It is those little things do add up. They do make a difference. How your shop window is merchandised, how you look after the store and its cleanliness and its presentation. That store environment is a very, very important thing. And I think the brands that are really winning on the high street at the moment are the ones that are really making it an experiential experience for people to want to have to go into the high street. They're really making an effort to make sure it is more than just going in and buying something. You're really kind of feeling something in that experience. But there's lots of things in this melting pot that makes retail work. It's, you know, the right price, having the right availability, the right stock that's in demand, and making sure that all of that comes together at the point at which a purchaser is going to want to make that purchase with you. Online, it gets a bit easier, but it is a double-edged sword. So online, there's so much data to go at. So being in a reasonable amount of detail with your data is critical to being successful online, for sure. Understanding what you forecast demand to be, at what price do you think that's going to convert, and making sure that you've got the user experience on your site, that all these things are coming together to make sure that the retail works. If I could pick on one thing though, and this was something that we got into reasonably early in the Clogs days, was merchandising and really understanding the breadth of your stock, the depth of your stock, the supply of your stock, and making sure that is in sync with your demand. That is when retail really comes together, and it can be a very quick process of scaling a business if you get those numbers right. We employed somebody after 3 or 4 years on our online business who we thought, I just need a spreadsheet guy. So someone who's going to look at all the data, keep churning out, slice and dice pivot tables, and tell me what's selling well, trend products, trend keywords, and feed that information back to me so that I can then inform buying decisions and trade decisions. And I thought, actually, this person's acting like a merchandiser, so I'm going to call him a merchandiser. I later found out that that's what everyone calls them, but I was quite happy that I managed to come up with that name all on my own. Oh, and we had one person that was dedicated to it, and we thought, well, we're so advanced here. We've got somebody who's in the information, in the data, and it's feeding back into the business. I remember when we first got bought by JD Sports, and I was welcomed up to JD headquarters and taken around their big HQ. And I was taken onto the first floor of their head office, and massive space, must have been 5,000 square feet of office space. And they said, oh yeah, these are the merchandisers. And I thought, oh, right, okay. So we had one person and I thought we were doing a good job. They had, must have been over 100 that were powering the merchandising behind that business. And I think if you were to sit down with Peter Cowgill, the chief exec at the time, who had the accounting background in JD Sports, he would put a large part down to the success of JD over the last 20 years, to their ability to know what stock needed to be where and when. So they were shifting stock by category, by colour, by size, across their network overnight. And the merchandisers were feeding that information. That really kind of hit it home that to get it done right in retail, you've got to be in your data, you've got to be in your merchandising numbers. So it's not a case of just to buy some stock and see how it sells. It's if you want to scale and you want to get it right, you can't do it by accident. You have to engineer it that way.
We always say, don't we, that any good marketer is part art, part science. And you definitely are more on the science side, if you don't mind me saying so. And that has led to your new product that you're launching, the Gross Demand Plan. Should we talk about that?
So the Gross Demand Plan was just a phrase I coined myself back in the noughties. I needed a system behind the scenes in Clogs to marry up what the finances were telling me and what people were doing on the trading website on a week-to-week basis. And the two things on separate systems just always produced different results for me when I was trying to reconcile how I thought we were trading with that, actually what the accounting numbers told me. And because I had that accounting background coming into the business, it always sat with myself to kind of be the person responsible for trying to make that work. So I created an Excel file at the time that linked the key variables of your website performance with the accounting P&L of the business. And if I could be in control of the weekly variables, then I would know that if those variables were right and were in my range, that my profit and loss should therefore be produced in the way I expect it to. So I coined this phrase called the gross demand, which is the total amount of demand that a website has to generate in order to then produce net sales and a cost of goods sold and my P&L. What is the very top number that I've got to generate if I want this other thing to look the way I want it to? And your gross demand is a calculation. So it's your total weekly sales on your website. It is the amount of visitors you get to your website times your conversion rate times your average order value. Those three things equal sales. And each three of those variables will have a seasonality that runs separately to the other. So they won't all be in sync at the same time. You won't always get the best conversion rate, the best AOV, and the best amount of traffic. They'll all ebb and flow in their own ways. So understanding the interplay of those three variables was really important for me. I identified that as being really important quite early to understand how that worked if I had any chance of predicting what my sales looked like. So once we know what our conversion rate graph might look like, what our AOV, our average order value graph would look like, the balancing item, what's left over, is how much traffic I need to bring to the site. And the amount of traffic has a cost associated with it. It has a cost per click. So if I know I need to drive 10,000 visitors to the site this week, I've then got a marketing challenge to understand which channels I'm going to drive those 10,000 visitors from. And once I can model that cost can go into my P&L. Once I know how many orders I know I'm going to be generating, I know what my shipping costs and my returns costs and my packaging labeling costs, what they are going to look like. And the seasonality of what my gross margins are going to look like as well. So I can put this all into a model and trend it by week and build it up over a 52-week period to create an e-commerce model that should predict my financial P&L. And that's what we call the gross demand plan. It's uncertainty when running a business that detracts from enjoying retail. It's when you don't know why sales are the way they are, or you don't know how you're performing, or you get really disappointed that you haven't made as much money as you think you should do. It's because you're not in control of all the numbers and you don't quite know what you should be doing. If you can try and reduce all of the variables that are out there down to a handful of moving parts and just be in control of those, then you're going to stand a much better chance of doing what you want to do online or in your business and therefore enjoying it. And that's, as business owners, that's what we all want. You know, at the very least, we want to enjoy what we're doing. And you know, other results obviously nicely go on top of that, don't they? But you want to wake up in the morning and feel like you want to go to work. And being in control and having knowledge is what it's all about.
That's something you said to me, Chris. You said that actually it should help business owners sleep at night, and therefore they can then enjoy what they enjoy in their business, be that product design or taking care of their team. They've just got the gross demand plan and that data behind them to allow them to do what they enjoy.
Absolutely. I mean, the typical profile of someone who started a business online isn't someone who's necessarily financial and accounting savvy. They're someone that's a great creative. They've got a great supply connection. They've got, you know, they're very good at buying their particular stock or creating the stock that they are retailing. And they want to spend their time doing that. And any time that they're not spending doing that, they're suppressing the potential of their business because they're having to spend it worrying about cash flow or worrying about, you know, what packaging costs might look like. They're not spending their time being creative and introducing new stock, which is ultimately what is going to create their demand and make their businesses grow if they can spend their time there. By having these tools available to them, it allows them to be much more creative because they know it's being taken care of. And it also tends to be metrics that business owners are more comfortable with. So show someone a P&L and they might not have the best time, but if you show someone what their average order value is and conversion rate, instantly they can get a handle on that. They can see that on a daily basis, and therefore they can feel more comfortable and confident that the P&L will start to look after itself. So that again helps with just the enjoyment that you've got your handle on things that are going to make a difference and you can feel comfortable about it.
Now, this podcast is to talk about the joy of retail, but we should probably cover off any lessons you've learned or any advice that you can give to people starting out. Like, what are the key lessons that you wish you knew 20 years ago that you could impart onto our listeners?
Retail doesn't take any prisoners. I mean, that's the main thing. Okay, so there's no harsher critic than the general public. So there's no hiding place for it. You've got to be on your game. You've got to understand what you're doing. If you're going to take something to, you know, to market, whether it's online or in a shop, you've got to bring your A game and you've got to make sure that you've got something to say. So being prepared and knowing your data, knowing what your proposition is and being confident in it is really important. And I've learned the lesson of not doing that, you know, just, oh, let's buy this, let's buy that, let's just put it online, see if it works. And then if, you know, doing things consistently and doing them with good logic really do count for a lot more. So not rushing into things, making sure things are well planned and you're prepared for what you are doing, I think is really important. And you know, just when you're presented with so much data, why not use it? And I think I see quite a lot of business owners online are just a bit intimidated by it and they don't want to get into the numbers because it's something that frightens them. But you should grasp that nettle, because it's the people that do grasp the nettle are the ones that succeed. The ones that don't take an interest in their data, that don't do it, are the ones that end up falling away. So if you want to be successful, you know, seize the moment, get into the numbers, speak to as many people as you can about it and get to know them, get familiar with them so that you're just better informed.
Another question or some advice that I'm after for the listeners, what do you think retailers should be doing more of and less of in the future?
That's another really good question. In what context do you mean? Sort of like in a product sense or?
Well, let's have a think about future trends. So if we think about what's happening in the industry and in the marketplace in 22 and 23, where do you think people should be focusing their attention? Online retailers?
Well, it's very fast moving, isn't it? I've lived through a few big trends in the online space. I was very much in deep with Google in the noughties. Google's obviously still important, but in the noughties, it was all about Google. Google PPC, Google SEO. That's where the majority of your traffic and the battle was won. In the last 10 years, it's been social media. You know, Facebook has arrived on the scene as another very credible marketing machine that's taken a lot of that marketing revenue away from Google. And then after Facebook, Instagram in the second half of the noughties has become the, obviously still part of Meta, but as a form of marketing has really kind of hit its curve. But even that's now peaked. And now we're looking at things like TikTok, which are still very of the moment and I think have still got a few years ahead of it. So in terms of the short term, certainly platforms like TikTok are where there's a huge amount of traffic to be won and lost. And the generations that are coming up and will become new buyers in the next 5 years and next 10 years are going to be on that platform. So really trying to understand how that content gets engagement is going to be a critical part of anyone going online to drive huge amounts of traffic. That's not to say that Meta and Google won't have their place, but you're just getting this ever broader mix of places online which are driving traffic and creating engagement. I'm just always amazed at how the next thing does materialize. I mean, I couldn't have seen Facebook when I was, you know, eyes focused on Google, and then Instagram came along and it was kind of like, okay, this is another way of doing it. And then TikTok's come along and this is another way of doing it, of taking a whole generation and putting them on a different social media. I think the next thing, you know, that's obviously emerging at the moment is the metaverse and understanding how that is going to play into retailers. We've seen brands all over the place rush to get patents for their trademarks of their brands registered in the metaverse. It's almost too much to fathom, but I mean, there's all sorts of potential of how the metaverse is going to interact with retail, and in particular online retail, virtual stores, that whole virtual reality experience, augmented reality, all of that ties into that space. And the pace at which the adoption happens as well can be so quick. So always to be on guard, I guess, is the main thing. Always be open-minded to the next thing, and be prepared to move with the seas of change, because you don't want to get left behind and not adapt, because you will just lose market share as a result. If you just stuck on Google SEO, and you'd have missed the whole social media. And if you just want to keep plowing away at Instagram now, you're going to miss the TikTok generation. You've got to be prepared to move and be prepared to learn with it. The principles will always remain the same. It will always remain, how do I engage with my audience? What do I need to put out there in terms of content to engage with that person I want to connect with? With SEO, it was very formulaic. It was about constructing a sentence with a certain amount of keywords. SEOs will hate that explanation of it, but it was, in this rudimentary sense, you have to have some optimized text that appeals to that audience. Very kind of no personality necessarily behind that. Social media brought much more personality behind it. Videos are kind of the next level of personality, isn't it? It's how do you create that content in another level? And so those principles will remain the same, but how they deployed will just keep getting ever more innovative. And you've just got to be prepared to embrace it, I'd say.
So, Chris, if any SEOs want to get in touch about your last comment, or anybody wants to find out about grossdemandplan.com or Cake Agency, how's the best way that they find you and connect with you online?
So I'll be on LinkedIn. Just type in Chris Thomas. I'll be there as the founder of Cake Agency, or go straight to cake.agency, and all my details and links are on there. A lot more kind of case studies and blogs about what we've talked about. Always happy to talk about e-commerce and retail. And once you get me started, it's hard to stop. So if you want to get in touch, please do.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the Joy of Retail podcast, Chris. Hand on heart, you have been the best podcast guest we've ever had. And obviously our first guest. And I am looking forward to handing over the interview mantle to you to speak to our future guests. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Chris.
Thank you for listening to The Joy of Retail from Cake Agency, the e-commerce agency founded by retailers for retailers. We're passionate about retail, passionate about e-commerce, and passionate about helping others feel the joy that comes from both when you get it right. When you get us talking, it's hard to get us to stop, so we want to bring more of these stories to you in the weeks ahead. We work with Bad Monday, P&Co, 304 Clothing, and many more. And we'd love to work with you. You can find out more about us and the clients we work alongside at cake.agency. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd love you to follow it in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode. And if you'd like to feature as a guest, it would be great to hear from you. Please email hello@cake.agency.